I don't get it. One minute she's this nice, sweet girl, and the next minute she's writing these weird letters.
I don't know. I think Emily has what is called a borderline type personality.
Andrea, she's nuts.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode, season 2, episode 16, My Desperate Valentine. All right, here are your hosts, Tari Arrieto and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh boy, this is a big one.
There is.
It's such a big one. I'm annoyed that there are actually two other minor storylines, but they sort of all braid together in the end. So let's start and then we'll get to the main event. The C story. Brenda and Dylan try to tamp down their throbbing biological urges. Mostly without success. Brenda and Dylan are making out on a chaise longue in her backyard when she literally calls timeout, as we hear in clip number 2.
Dylan, timeout.
Okay, coach. I'll sit the bench for a while. Timeout's over.
No, come on. We're supposed to be studying history, not sex education.
Well, I'm sorry. There's just something about this Louisiana purchase, you know, it drives me wild.
Dylan, I'm serious. We should be doing more than this.
No, I think so too. Let's go upstairs.
No! Look, I mean more than making out all the time. And not that I don't like it, because I do. I like it a lot. It's just that it's practically all we ever do anymore.
Oh, that's not true. I mean, last weekend we went to a movie.
Yeah, and we barely saw any of it.
Well, it's not my fault. I mean, I wasn't exactly kissing myself, you know.
Look, all I'm saying is we should make a little extra effort to do something interesting, cultural.
So we won't feel guilty when we're making out all the time.
Exactly.
Oh, music cues. Don't make Shannon Doherty say cultural. She can't. It's just mean.
Yeah. Anyway.
Seriously. So, there's some more grab ass during float construction, which we will get to. And then they go see a string quartet recital, which they rudely talk through at almost full volume. And the music just makes them hornier. And as the quartet is taking their bows, they are making out again in the audience. Brenda recaps it for Kelly. She's embarrassed. Later, we find out where he's taking her for their next attempt to do something cultural. And we hear that in clip number 3.
He's taking you where? Out for an evening at Paganini. Oh, their pasta is supposed to be excellent.
that's about what it deserves.
I mean, something I just noticed this time, and I put it in the visual aids, is that Donna / Tori Spelling has a stupid punchline face that she makes after her stupid punchlines, where she like sticks her chin way up like she's so proud of herself for getting it out. It is embarrassing. She definitely...
Sometimes there's also an audible
mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. She definitely got better with the comedy as time went on, but at this point when she's still new to stuff, it's really awkward. So look out for the punchline face. You're going to be seeing it a lot in season 2. when we see this, this Paganini recital, it's a solo violinist. Brenda hopes it's livelier than last week. Dylan's into passion wherever he can find it. And, she does seem to like it. They actually have a nice moment where we cut to them and Brenda is rapt with attention and he smiles at her because he likes that she likes it, which is cool. Moving on. The B story. The Blaze has a phantom pen pal and Sarah has a new favorite accent glorified extra. Let's hear some of it in clip number 4.
And have you noticed that all the rich kids north of Sunset have the biggest egos and the smallest brains?
Oh, God, don't tell me. Right, so, Phantom Pen Pal strikes again.
What's this, like the 4th letter we've gotten?
Are you kidding? This is like the 7th in the last 2 weeks.
Hey, I think we should give this guy his own column.
You would, Griffin.
No, this is pure social satire. Wouldn't it be hysterical to see what your basic West Beverly princesses would do if somebody slashed their BMW convertibles to shreds?
This guy's twisted. Really, this is not my idea of satire. Come on, people, we got a paper to put out. Let's do it.
I think we should give this guy his own column.
His own column. Pure social satire. And plus, he has that, like, quintessential 90s like mullety poof. Like he is the love child of Joel Fleischman and Dennis Farina.
Yep.
Don't ask. Just go to visual aids.
Yep.
Trust me.
The sweater he has on is pure Fleischman too. You're totally right.
I own that sweater in the reverse, or like the inverse colorway.
Shaker knits were big in the 90s, kids. Ask your parents.
Wore it with the V to the back.
Oh.
What's up?
Dang. That's advanced. Moving on.
No, it was actually delayed. I should put that in the visual aids.
Later, they get another letter from the Phantom Pen Pal in clip number 5.
And it will be my pleasure to throw gasoline on the fire that burns this school to the ground.
And he expects us to print this?
That's what he's demanding, but we're obviously not going to give him that case of form.
Hey, like it or not, baby, this is news.
I'm sorry. There's nothing newsworthy about hate mail. I mean, listen to how he ends this. And if some of the little bitches get caught in the flames, toss me another marshmallow.
Could we maybe not be so sexist in assuming this person is a guy? Just saying, / foreshadowing.
Also, it's newsworthy. These are felonious threats.
Yeah.
They ran the Zodiac's letters. I'm just saying.
Felonious threats is one of my favorite musicians.
Moving on.
He is better than jazz.
What could these letters possibly have to do with anything else that's happening in this episode? You probably already
know.
Maybe you do. So let's get to the A story, because the other two plot lines are going to braid into it. A story, Emily Valentine. She cray. Emily shows up to school in her Tears of a Clown outfit. Check it out in the visual aids. Mustard cropped vest.
She looks like a gator waiter in Beetlejuice.
She totally does. She's got like classic red tartan pants on. It's a bad scene. She sees someone at her locker who she thinks is Brandon. It's obviously too tall to be him, but whatever. And she gets all handsy with him. And when he turns around, he looks so horrified. Please check it out in the visual aids. He's clearly, his reaction is like a girl touching him is the worst thing that's ever happened to him. But anyway, Brandon has changed lockers. She finds him in the Blaze office. He claims that he moved to be closer to there because he's there all the time. Whatever. He greets Andrea, not Emily. He hasn't seen her yet. Andrea knows that he's ducking Emily. David on the radio show expos announces about the homecoming float contest. There's some stuff about people wanting to enter from the gang or not wanting to, except Brenda has apparently already designed this float. Whatever. This doesn't,
hey.
I mean, this will matter, but all of the logistics are like, we didn't need this much detail. in the Blaze office, Emily does find Brandon and confronts him about moving his locker, but not really very confrontationally. This is where he lies that about
literally digging her toe into the ground, as she will spend many scenes doing.
Mm-hmm. She clearly doesn't buy this story, but, you know, there's not really anything that she can say. So she follows him into the hall, and they have this non-confrontation in clip number 6.
Brandon, how about going on tonight?
I can't, Emily.
Come on, Brandon. It's been 2 weeks since we've been together.
No, I really can't. I have to study tonight.
Well, how about I come over and we can study together?
I really don't think we'll get much studying done that way. Listen, I gotta go.
Brandon, aren't we ever gonna... Okay. You have to study. I understand. See you later.
Okay, so I mentioned this in the last podcast, but he, again, like, just tell her, I don't want to see you. The reason I haven't seen you in 2 weeks is that I don't want to see you. We're not a couple. Stop everything.
Yeah, like, take the hint, and if she's not taking the hint, Brandon, just dump her in so many words. This is me dumping you, go away.
Yeah. Ugh. This is not, like, it's clear that, and he does get called on this later, as we will hear, but this is him thinking he's being, like, a good guy, but he's not. He's leading her on, and it's mean.
And his reasons for being a good guy are so
gross.
So obnoxious.
They really are. So later we see Brandon at home. He is, in fact, studying. There's, like, a million hang-up phone calls. The third time he does the thing where it's like, all right, jerk, blah, 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 and then it's Steve. who invites him out to the Peach Pit. Like, that's fun. Yes, let's go hang out where I work, whatever. But he does go. Steve urges Brandon to be direct with Emily, who, of course, then walks in. He's embarrassed to see her because he had told her that he was studying. And so when she comes over, he just says he's taking a break and her parents are out of town for the weekend, which is why she's there. Can she join them? Steve makes himself scarce, probably hoping that Brandon will tell her, no, go away, but he doesn't. She wants to talk about Kismet. He finally says he doesn't think they should see each other anymore. She's very remorseful about the euphoria incident and tells him that she loves him and she'll do anything for a second chance. He sighs and says he wishes it were that simple. She says maybe he should just take a couple weeks to make sure he's sure, but he's sure. And later, Brandon walks her to her bike, but her tires have been slashed. And she very melodramatically says whoever did it should have slashed her throat while he was at it. Okay. Not really a normal thing to say. It's tires. And there's only two. It's a motorcycle. But Emily then is next scene standing over a cot in Brenda's room. Brandon is way too friendly under the circumstances. I mean, it's awkward because she has nowhere else to stay if her parents are out of town. But at the same time, like, maybe, you know, dial it back. You are trying to break up with this person.
Well, and also her parents left her alone.
Yeah.
She can go to the house alone. That was the plan. Mm-hmm. This is all whatever. It's all a contrivance to let her be crazier. But anyway, he is being way too like, call concierge if you need anything. Like, dude, don't.
It's not helpful. Again.
Yeah.
So he goes into his room. Brenda is sitting on his bed furiously. And they talk a little bit about whether he, in fact, is being too nice in clip number 7.
You and Dylan are the only two people who know that she spiked my drink at the club. I like to keep it that way.
Brandon, why are you so into protecting her?
Because I don't want to see her become the outcast just because I break up with her.
Sarah?
Ew. It's just so, I mean, that's the show. And
yes.
It's like this the gang is like the kings and queens of the school, which whatever. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like, you know, first of all the other characters in the airlock, she can hang out with them because you've dumped like 15 people now.
Seriously.
But also, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Please. I know it's never going to happen, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. So later in the night, Emily wakes up, makes sure that Brenda is asleep, and sneaks into Brandon's room. She takes his twins jersey off the foot of the bed and fondles it.
Smells it.
Grossly. And then crawls into bed in flash on him and kisses his cheek, wakes him up with a real kiss. He is helpless to resist for a minute, and then he gets control of himself in clip number 8.
What do you want? You want to be with me tonight and have me break up with you tomorrow morning? Is that what you want?
If we make love right now, I promise you won't want to break up with me.
Emily, to make love, I have to be in love.
Oh, really? How's Cheryl?
Well, seriously, also, how would you know this is the second girl you've had the opportunity to have sex with since then? Whatever. How do you know what you have to be to do anything sex-related? Anyway, I reminded Sarah, I know you don't watch the show, but the 30 Rock episode that Jennifer Aniston was in where she was crazy buddy. There's a whole, basically the story is crazy girls are the best in bed. And even though Jack knows that she's a total nightmare, he can't stop having sex with her. And she does increasingly crazy things, including breaking into his house and then telling him she made him a frittata or something. I can't remember the actual food stuff. It's a great episode. Check it out. It's impossible not to, if you have seen it, be reminded of that when Emily says that if she had sex with him, he would not want to break up with her. Because maybe it's true. If she is crazy in bed, she might be right.
Well, I don't think without the rough trade cap that he really wants to go there.
True. One commercial break later, we and the boom mic operator are in the kitchen.
Oh, really?
I didn't even see. Oh, it's in the visual aids with Arrow. Cindy is on the phone with Emily's mother, I think. Emily comes down and quickly grabs the phone in a way that seems kind of suspicious. Cindy repeats the tire lie, Mom never got the message. All of this is super duper sketchy. And even Cindy, who believes the best of everybody, gets an excellent co-eye roll with Brenda, which is also the visual.
They're both like,
When Cindy is not on your side, you done goofed, because she believes she wants to be on your side. Moving on. This float construction is happening. David is shooting it for the video yearbook in a Fido Dido shirt because it's the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It's also the visual aids. Donna shows up in what can only be described as a carpentry costume, but then refuses to take a paintbrush because she doesn't want to get it dirty because comedy. Whatever. Emily comes out of the house in Brandon's precious twin jersey. He clocks it but doesn't comment. And then the one who does comment on it is Andrea in clip number 9.
Future? I spent last night here with Brandon and I had nothing to wear this morning.
Pardon me?
Brandon invited me to stay over last night and things got a little, well, you know. He's something special.
I gotta check the paint.
Check the paint is joining my permanent lexicon along with this place is never again. Emily is such a shithead to Andrea all the time. Like, it's kind of amazing.
And it's so badly acted, too. Like, yes. I have to give Carteris credit for, like, doing the classic Andrea jaw jut bulldog shutdown face. Mm-hmm. And being like, I gotta check the paint. Because it's so hard to take Emily seriously because it's so badly acted.
Yes. And she's trying so hard. Like, she would just be exhausting. Ugh. Anyway, elsewhere in the yard, Steve and Dylan cannot believe that Brandon is not icing out Emily and also that he's letting her wear his precious jersey. But he explains in clip number 10.
She won't leave me alone, man, and she won't take a hint. I've already broken up with her in clear and certain terms.
Yeah, well, obviously not clear enough.
What am I supposed to do, be brutal? It's not me, man.
That's the only reason I clipped it. Like, no, heaven forbid you ever be mean or yell at anyone. Whatever.
No.
He is afraid, he says, of what will happen to Emily if he dumps her. Again, this is his concern. Dylan is afraid of what will happen to Brandon if he doesn't. So Brandon finally scolds Emily for wearing his precious twins jersey. She claims, get this, she will, if she gets paint on it, she'll just remove it with club soda. What kind of paint are they using, I would like to know, for this parade float?
It's those hard pucks you used to paint with in grade school.
It would have to be. That's the only thing that would wash out with club soda. Like, no, you need turpentine and that would wreck the shirt. Stop being a dick just because you want to parade around in your non-boyfriend's clothes. Anyway, she agrees to take it off, starts unbuttoning it in the driveway in front of everyone, forcing Brandon to tell her to leave it on. Ugh. Anyway, later, excuse me, the next day, Emily apologizes for the shirt incident and for sneaking into his room and says if he never spoke to her again, she would understand. He nicely, again, too nicely, accepts her apology. She says she's ready to deal with the situation. If it's not going to work out, it's okay. They shake on it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then Jim gets home, turns off the answering machine before whoever was calling hangs up, and then apparently was not the first time, as we will hear in clip 11.
Come on, Dad. What's up? Spencer's killing me.
Wait, just a second. Listen to this.
Hi. Me, Brandon. I was just thinking of you.
It's Emily.
Your baby blue, that totally disarming smile that fills any rainy day I have with sunshine.
Ugh.
I miss you, Brandon. I miss being next to you. The feel of your arms wrapped around me, the touch of your skin, the way you caressed my body.
I think we got a picture, Dad.
Are you sure?
Have they had sex?
There's 12 more here just like it if you want to listen to them.
No, thank you, Dad.
So what the hell is going on here, Brandon? Hello? Hello, Emily? I'm getting sick of this.
We don't know that was her.
Oh, come on, Mom. It's pretty obvious.
And it's pretty obvious that she wanted me and your mother to hear those messages, which I don't think is a sign of a balanced person.
I mean, Jim's got a point.
Yeah.
The other thing that I love about this part of the stalking, though, is that kids, again, ask your parents. There's nothing that dads hate more than people fucking with the phone. I remember that
it's so true
from my childhood. Like, there was always rules about, like, your friends can't call past a certain time. You couldn't be on it for too long. It was, like, rules about how to, you know, answer it properly, be polite, blah, 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 take messages. Like, maybe my dad was just really crazy.
Your dad sounds like real taskmaster.
No, mine were pretty, I mean, they finally got me my own line when I was 13, so they wouldn't have to deal with a lot of this stuff. This is back when even calling, like, within a zip code or within an area code to another town was still, like, a small toll call.
Really?
Kids, ask your parents. Yes.
Ask my grandparents. I've never heard of that. Hmm.
Yeah, like calling, I don't know, calling like Caldwell from Summit Caldwell. It was like a nominal, it was like 15 cents, but still. Then my dad was like, call once. If you have to pee in the middle, leave the line. But then he also hated the line being tied up. I'm like, who's going to call here? He's like, that's not the point. And then we also weren't allowed to take the phone off the hook to like take a crap.
Right.
I'm like, but it's just going to ring and ring. Whatever. Dads are weird. They're also obsessed with making good time. I don't know what it is. When a man has a child and all of a sudden.
Yeah. The phone stuff is real. I don't think it was just my dad. Because that was definitely a thing that he had too. Where it was like, you can't.
I didn't talk on the phone that much because I didn't have any friends. But. I do remember being able to, when we finally got an answering machine, like, you know, 7 years after everybody else had one, being able to record it. And then they became more and more convoluted and complex until like I had like a minute long message that was like, I had like the, a clip from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Like I had a TV right next to the recorder and I was like, I was doing this basically. I was like producing a podcast. A minute long, but it was me explaining how to leave a message, and it had something to do with the end of Monty Python. So it was all this Monty Python stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was 11 or 12.
Yeah. Lou Ariano would not have stood for that.
No, Lou Ariano would not have stood for that. Leaving for the airport. No.
Dave Sr. stood for that once and then was like, are you playing Mary Had a Little Lamb with a keypad? I was like, no, I'll blow a glaze.
Anyway, the scene goes
on. This has been phone talk.
this has been Kids Ask Your Parents. Cindy wants them to be compassionate to Emily. And she reminds Brenda that it wasn't so long ago that Brenda was torn up about her breakup. Brenda is extremely offended at the suggestion that she behaved in any way like Emily when she and Dylan broke up, which I have to say is fair. She did not.
True.
And then there's more hangups, so whatever. The next day, Brandon is in a great mood because he eventually took the phone off the hook. Brenda offers to talk to Emily.
Point of order.
Yes.
Is she hearing this every time she calls?
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
No, she's not hearing anything. She's hearing a busy signal. This is from the past.
No, when she left all the messages.
Oh, no, that's Dylan's message. She's been calling Brandon.
Oh, that's Dylan. Oh, yeah, okay.
That's Dylan.
She's also calling from a payphone, kids, ask your parents.
Brenda offers to talk to her. This is a bad idea, as Brandon points out, since, you know, Brenda would probably bite her head off. And Brenda does not claim that she wouldn't, but she also says this in clip number 12.
Obviously, the girl's kind of messed up.
Kinda? Give me a break. I mean, she's bothered in the extreme. The way she sounded on the answering machine last night, I wouldn't be surprised if she was a hardcore stoner.
Okay, two things about that clip. One, we already heard Jim say that her phone calls are not the sign of a balanced person, which is the mildest way to put it. There's a lot of not okay language about the mentally ill in this episode. That's a great example.
Yeah.
Because...
I mean, and then the like, well, we'll get to it at the end, but yeah. Ignorant.
Yeah. I mean, okay, yes, at the top of the storyline, I did call her cray, but I'm taking my cues from how the episode treats her.
But a hardcore stoner?
That's the other thing.
Is that a thing that stoners do?
No.
Prank calling?
No. If she were a stoner, which suggests to me that she would be smoking weed, like, she would try it maybe twice and then get bored and start watching Beavis and Butthead because it's the 90s.
There'd be a lot more, like, Dorito crunching. Like, yes. Those dopas.
She wouldn't
using the phone system.
Not that they know that she's calling from a payphone, but she definitely would not have taken the initiative to leave the house to make these phone calls if she were a hardcore stoner, which I don't even know what that is. Anyway, they move on from there. and point up something that hasn't really been brought up, but is actually a great point in clip 13.
Brenda, you don't know that about her. You don't know anything about her.
Yeah, well, neither do you. Have you been inside her house, Brendan? Have you met her parents? Do you know any of her friends from her old school? Face it, Brandon. Nobody knows who this girl is.
It's a great point. I mean, a lot of the time...
That is true.
It's partly that it's like, again, it's like Cheryl all over again. Brandon is so self-involved that he doesn't notice how little he knows about the person that he's seeing. But I also just assumed that the reason that we didn't meet her family was that, you know, the show didn't want to pay them. Like,
yeah, no, Andrea, that's what I assume.
Andrea is a full,
we never meet them.
No, we don't. Andrea is a full cast member and we, you know, see her parents one time. Anywho, they come outside to the washed and ironed twins shirt and a homemade cake. Brandon is excited because he's a fucking idiot and immediately dips his finger in the icing and Brenda has to tell him. Maybe he shouldn't have any because the whole thing could be dosed with euphoria or worse, and repeats that Brandon doesn't know Emily at all. And then this happens, clip 14.
Oh, dissonant piano.
Wow.
And it is trying really hard, in my humble opinion.
Yep.
To try to rise to the level of, Dave, do we have the drop?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Emily Valentine, you're no Ted Bundy. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
God, wow, that's still really creepy. Like,
it really
little
is.
Hairs just stood up again.
So Emily comes into the Blaze office. She has a folding Corona typewriter. Andrea is actually nice to Emily for maybe the first time ever as she admires it. And Emily says she's giving it to the paper. Andrea can't accept it, but Emily says she knows that Andrea will take care of it. It's a parting gift because she's quitting. She says she blew it with Brandon. She's not staying where she's not wanted for the sake of Brandon, like whatever. I mean,
also giving possessions away,
mm-hmm.
suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
Someone called Mrs. Teasley. Thank you.
No one does, of course. Even Andrea, who you would think might have something twigged to this because of her rap line training.
The rap line, hello.
Yep, exactly. But she doesn't. however, she does insist that Emily come to the float inauguration, which is kind of a lofty term for what is happening. So Emily does. Later, Brenda sees her in the hall and glares at her, and we hear this, clip 15.
Speaking of restraint, I would really just like to bust that girl's chops sometimes.
What is your problem with her?
Yeah, I mean, she's always nice to me. Look, I really don't want to get into it. Just trust me, she's doing a major obsession job on Brandon.
I used to do that all the time.
Kelly, not like this.
Uh-huh, in eighth grade, I sent Ronnie Lightstone perfume love letters and called him 10 times a day.
And what happened?
Well, his mother paid a visit to my mother, and I got grounded, lost my phone privileges, and learned the gentle art of subtlety.
All right, first of all, that's a hilarious story.
Yep.
I love that Kelly told it on herself. This is like peak awesome Kelly.
Yep.
People have been talking about it on our forums at previously.tv and being like, yeah, it's really refreshing to rewatch these and remember why we used to think she was awesome, because she turned into total sanctip Kelly later on.
Yep.
Mostly I asked to clip this because they're talking about the gentle art of subtlety while ragging on Emily like 3 feet away from her in the hallway.
Yeah, it's
And also bust that girl's chops.
That sounds like
take it easy, Dad.
I was going to say that sounds like LaVoyne talk to me.
Seriously. Say you want to kick her ass.
Mm-hmm.
But Tookus, whatever you could get away with on Fox.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, they
chops.
Said bitch on the show, so I don't know why ass wouldn't have been allowed. I bet ass is allowed. Doesn't matter. Anyway.
Speaking of asses.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Seriously. So Andrea brings Emily to see the float, and Brandon scolds her for it, basically. Dylan is in, Sarah.
The bottle.
It's in the visual aids. If you watch.
It is a testament to how titanically awkward everything is from here on out that I barely registered the Baja top until I was pulling a like clip for another visual aid in which seriously everyone has camel toe.
Oh my God. Yes.
Single butt cheek because they're wearing those weird polyester. Oh, Andrea.
Yeah.
Call your agent.
It's a whole camel petting zoo, unfortunately. So yeah, he's in the Baja hoodie. David sets the camera timer and everyone arranges themselves to get their picture taken with this float. Emily, of course, maneuvers herself next to Brandon. And in the seconds before the timer is about to go off, she leans in and kisses his neck. And finally, Brandon loses it in clip 16.
Damn it, Emily, enough. Don't touch me. Don't call me. Don't leave cakes on my doorstep. Don't manipulate situations so you wind up in my bedroom. And don't lie to my friends about some night of passion that never happened, all right?
Brand.
No, I'm sorry. I tried to do this the nice way, but you won't take a hint.
I can't help it. I love you.
Emily, listen to me.
No, no, you listen to me. When I first moved to L.A., a lot of guys were hitting on me, and I had my pick. Then I went out with you. I thought you were different.
No.
I thought you were special. I thought what we had was special.
Oh, no.
That's why I wanted my first time to be with you. So my first time.
Everyone's still standing 6 inches from them, P.S.
Yeah.
You gave me something to remember, all right. When I first moved here, everyone thought I was a slut. Well, Brandon, you've managed to make me feel like one. Thanks for the memories.
No one said you were a
I mean, first of all, what?
Yeah.
Second of all,
this is not about you being a slut or not. It's about you like being overly involved and a weirdo. Like,
and
it's not about sex at all.
Guys, the picture's not happening. Disperse. Let this happen. Like, go around behind the float and eavesdrop with a paper cup like a normal fucking person.
Yes.
Third of all, what?
Yeah.
What?
She makes the scene, and I mean, you're right. Everyone should leave. But also, like, later she bitches about how he treated her so badly in front of everyone. Like, that was all you. Like, you, first of all, provoked him into having to react because you were kissing his neck, like, with everyone around you. But also, you know, then you decided to continue and have this discussion when everyone was there. So part of this is on you. In fact, most of it is. Moving on. Steve has stayed over for dinner at the Walsh house and is regaling Jim and Cindy with the story of Brandon dumping Emily. Cindy feels bad for her and just hopes he didn't embarrass her in front of everybody. No comment. Then the phone rings. It's another hang up. We see a hand put a quarter in a payphone. Jim wants to call the phone company to get their number changed. Again, dad phone business. But Steve says he will handle it. And the next time it rings, he picks it up and pretends it's a pizza place. And she hangs up and he says, well, that got her. Like, she's been hanging up this whole time. That doesn't really prove anything that you got her to hang up. Whatever. Cindy suggests that Brandon call Emily's parents. Steve stays by the phone, clearly hoping that she calls again so that he can mess with her some more. And then Andrea shows up. And why? Let's find out. Clip 17.
Brandon, you know those bizarre letters we were getting at the paper?
Yeah.
Well, we got another one, and it's worse than the last.
So?
So I'm no Columbo, but all those letters were written on Emily's typewriter.
Let me look at that. West Beverly, heed my cry. Abusers of love deserve to die. Smug and secure in their well-mannered house. They won't have long. I'm as quiet as a mouse.
And a poet on top of everything else.
Don't you see? Not she really. Wanted me to discover these. These letters, they're a cry for help.
Cry for help. And a pretty obvious threat.
All right, settle down. Also, I don't know how Andrea is, like, now a forensic typewriter examiner. She could tell it was definitely the same typewriter. Like, if it's that old, it could be any old typewriter, probably. But whatever. The phone rings again. Jim unplugs the phone. Dad phone business. And then Emily, the hand tries again with another quarter. And the camera makes this big production out of show, like, wheeling around to show that it's her. Like, we figured that out, show. But
yeah,
thanks.
We didn't think it was going to be Scott. Whatever. Or Mrs. Scanlon. Like, I can't take it anymore.
I still have Transformers to give away. Yeah. Andrea then
take a tiny hat. For the love of God.
It's almost time for the limbo contest.
In hell.
In limbo. Yeah, as we heard up top, Andrea goes ahead and diagnoses Emily with borderline personality disorder, which is kind of serious, and she's really not qualified. And then Cindy comes out with a phone book. Emily's parents aren't listed. Brandon says the number he has for her is probably her private line. So they ask Brandon to call it so that this can be handled parent to parent. What can be handled, you ask? Well, Emily in the driveway, contemplating the float, holding a gas can. So this is happening while Brenda and Dylan, as we mentioned way up top, are at Paganini having the great pasta. Just kidding. And then we cut back and forth from the soloist, like, going to town on her violin and Emily dousing the float, throwing paint on it and shit.
White paint.
White paint on this white float.
On a white float.
Yep. Emily.
Great job, props. Talk about hardcore stoners. Jesus.
So after she's doused it, she then like gets up on it and physically pulls it apart, getting paint all over herself. And I have to say, as I put in my notes, this the cutting back and forth is quicker cuts than I remembered, and it actually feels kind of modern in a weird way. I was surprised at how sophisticated it seemed, considering how corny what is actually happening is.
Yeah, and it was too bad then that the continuity editor / hardcore stoner allowed a different white paint patch in almost every shot of Emily.
I did not notice that. So the piece concludes, and then Emily sits and gets out a lighter, and that's where she is when Dylan and Brenda drive home and see her sitting there. They tentatively walk up. Brenda is kind of aggressive with her. Dylan is more cautious, and then Brenda finally flips into her rap line mode, which she is also trained for, but Emily is not having it in clip 18.
Emily, come on, let's talk about this.
Hey, this is dangerous.
What is it to talk about? I know you hate me, Brenda. You've hated me since the first day I started school here. Emily, I don't hate you. Don't lie to me, Brenda, not now.
Brenda, wait a minute. She is whacked.
Dylan, she's talking to me. I have to listen.
She's also right there.
Yeah.
Be quieter.
You've never forgiven me for going out with him. And you resent the fact that Brendan liked me. Emily, that's not true. Don't lie to me, Brenda. Do you think I'm fooling around here? Do you think I'm interested in your two-faced talk? You turned everyone against me after I worked so hard and become part of your precious little group. I won't be a part of anything anymore. Emily, don't talk like that. You are a part of our group. Are you kidding? After the way Brandon dumped me, humiliated me in front of everyone.
I mean, we covered this, but, you know, you really pushed him into it.
Take some ownership there.
Seriously. Also,
Rumbles.
How hard did you work to get in with the group? I'm just saying.
You weren't even in half the episodes between when we met you and now, so.
Seriously.
Okay, thanks, bye.
Yeah. So then she's like, why is Brandon so mad at me? Like, you've said 17 times in this episode, you know why he is mad at you, and you get it, so do you or don't you? Whatever, this is bad writing. Brenda promises that Brandon will forgive Emily. She knows that he has an amazing ability to forgive. Remains to be seen. Emily, she says, just has to give him his space. This whole time, I have to say, I admire Luke Perry's acting because he has not taken his eyes off the lighter for a second, which is pretty good. Finally, Emily apologizes, and then she's letting herself into the back door. Like, it's weird blocking. I would think Brenda maybe should be opening the door, but whatever. It's a dumb thing.
Yeah, and once Dylan gets the lighter, tackle her to the ground and knock her the fuck out.
Seriously. As he comes in behind Emily, he does this. It's in the visual aids. This
so good.
Hilarious eye roll at Brandon, like, she's your problem now. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's like, I'm getting myself a beer. Bye.
For real. So all of the Walshes that were in the house come out, plus Andrea and Steve, and Emily apologizes, maybe for the last time. Actually, I know for a fact this is the last time, for now, in clip 19.
I'm sorry, Brandon. I'm sorry for everything. I'm sorry for the phone calls. For making up that story about my tires being slashed so I could spend the night with you.
What?
For those disgusting letters I didn't mean.
Most of all, I'm sorry for slipping you the euphoria.
Meaningful looks exchanged.
I don't expect you to ever want to forgive me or even talk to me again. I guess when I lost you, I went crazy. I thought I hated you. I thought I hated all of you. But the person I hate most of all right now is myself.
Sure.
I'm fine with that.
Go ahead.
No, I'm fine with her hating herself.
She also,
mostly because she's talking so slowly. Like, if you're having a manic episode, could you spit it out?
Yeah. Also, she refers to those disgusting letters she didn't mean, but I bet she meant them a little.
Well, it's high school.
Yeah. Also, well, anyway, so later Brandon comes home after dropping Emily off, and I 100% remembered there being a scene where, like, she's in the bug house and he comes to, like, have a last goodbye with her, but I realized...
I think you're thinking of Matthew Perry.
That's exactly what I was thinking of in my mind. I had totally conflated those two scenes.
I thought we had a scene where we met the parents, and they were like, you know... Oh, yeah, Bugsy. Okay, yeah. We'll lock her back up. Like, I thought there was some... I mean, okay, sorry.
Yeah, no.
That was rude.
It was.
But I thought there was a scene where they're like, oh, yeah, she has a history of this. But then that all happens off screen. They may have filmed it, just not a time.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so Brandon comes in to talk to her, to Brenda, who wants to, you know, obviously find out how it goes. And then they say this in our final clip, number 20.
Her mom told me she's been seeing a psychiatrist on and off for years.
Brandon, what do you think is wrong with her?
Okay. Is this really the way to discuss it? Like, what is wrong with her is very stigmatizing language, Brenda.
Well, you forget that this is what it was like.
Oh, I know.
Like, before Prozac Nation, like, ooh, scandalo.
Totally. Still, it's like, it's jarring. It's like when I was telling you, I've been watching a lot of SVU during the day. Hi, everybody. I was watching an episode from like 2003 that revolved around a trans woman getting attacked. And like, it was shocking how different the way even the SVU officers who are supposed to be like the sensitive ones who are properly trained and how to deal with situations like this, like Olivia Benson refers to this woman as a tranny. They all assume that she's a prostitute. Elliot also calls her a she, he, she, and outs her to her boyfriend. Like, all of this is not okay. It would never, ever happen on SVU now. Like, I know
I am shocked that it happened in a 2003 episode.
I know. I mean, it was 12 shocked. Years ago, but, like, still, that's, you know, that was 6 years into the run of the show, at least. So it's, or maybe four.
Here's another thing about them being, like, a psychiatrist, done.
I know, yeah.
That, like, that rings true to me, mm-hmm. but, like, throughout... They're remarkably and annoyingly ungossipy about what Emily's been up to.
Yeah.
That when Brenda's like, yeah, I don't want to get into it. I'm like, yes, you do. You're 17.
Yeah. I mean, that she says she doesn't want to. I think that's because Brandon told her not to tell about her spiking his drink. So I think that was out of loyalty to him. But like, yeah, that would have come out by that point.
Okay, but if she's going full kookaburra, like you can talk about that and be like, oh, yeah, she's totally hanging up. And
yeah.
Full what?
Full kookaburra.
Yeah, we're sensitive lot.
We're very sensitive. Anyway.
Don't be such a squeak. Now
we've just insulted the mentally ill and Australia.
Australia knows what it did.
There's no shame if you're having problems in getting help, of course. Obviously. This podcast is officially pro good mental health.
Yes.
For the record. Anyway, Brandon doesn't
good
know
save.
What... What did you say?
I said good save, Arietta.
I thought you called me a squeef, which would have also applied. Anyway, he doesn't know what's wrong with her. He says he thinks that Emily is incredibly lonely, but at the same time, she can't handle anyone being close to her. And Brenda says she thinks that sounds right. Okay.
No,
done and
it
done.
Doesn't. Worst possible analysis. Like, I know it's none of Andrea's business, but borderline personality sounded pretty close to me.
Yeah.
Says the English major who reads a lot of true crime. Whatever. Shut up, Sarah. Moving on.
Brandon wants to know what Brenda said to get Emily off the float. And Brenda says she told Emily she would always have two friends in Beverly Hills. No, she won't. The end. I mean, this isn't quite a situation of they never saw her again, but they did see her for quite a while. It takes like good two more years before she reappears. Spoiler alert.
Yep.
And yeah, that's it. Bye, Emily. Her parents pack her off somewhere and then they don't see each other again. Although we will get to it eventually. But maybe the reason that I remembered a scene of him seeing her is that when they do reunite, there's a lot of business about the shirt that we don't see in this episode because she still has it when he sees her in San Francisco. The Minnesota Twins shirt. Oh,
weird.
If I recall correctly, at least they talk about it, unless it's like she found it out of
her bag. I think you're right. I mean, that's still very weird, and I'm not going to understand that when we finally get to it years from now.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think you're right. That sounds right.
Anyway, so that's the episode. She was desperate, you guys. She was our desperate Valentine. Who was the most valuable player?
Steve?
Yeah, Steve's pretty great.
Actually, Encyclopedia Zuckerman.
Yeah,
because she's a forensic Remingtonologist. Who cares? She did it. Good job.
I'm going to give it to Dylan for that eye roll at the end because I really love it.
Fair. That's legit.
I mean, Emily doesn't cover herself in glory in this episode, but as I've been saying, a lot of the blame goes to Brandon for not... For really leading her on in a way that's kind of cruel.
Yeah. I'm going to give it to Emily's parents.
Yes. Good call.
Like, if your daughter has had some troubles, some perspective adjustment issues in the past, and you have just busted her totally lying about many things.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe don't go out of town and leave this particular child alone.
Yeah. When another parent is on the phone telling you a story that you think sounds kind of hinky and she can't really corroborate it well when you actually get your child on the phone, they maybe have your antenna.
And it seems like they weren't even out of town, were they?
Yeah, maybe not, because they call. Like, because they're on the phone with her, obviously. So they must have called the Walshes, because as it's established, the Walshes do not have their number.
Yeah.
Wheels within wheels. I don't know what that means. The Kim Challenge.
You're way overthinking this.
We really are. Wait, let's go back to Brandon's shift from the Euphoria episode. Just kidding. Let's
go. Bad, and dangerous to me.
The Kim Challenge. Five reasons from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he's certainly bad as a recital attendee because he just spends the time feeling up his girlfriend.
Yeah, he suggests that you go upstairs in your house where you live with your parents to make out when your dad doesn't like him. I feel like that's a horrible idea.
And your mom is probably home because she's always home. So weird.
When she's not at the plant nursery with Anna.
Yeah. Well, he wears
He's wearing a jacket whose shoulder pads are so giant that he might not be able to fit through a door, bounce like backwards, and get whiplash.
He's wearing a Baja hoodie. I can't believe you didn't say that.
That is dangerous to my corny eye.
It's also bad. And if you happen to get in the path of that eye roll he delivers, you might get physically injured because it is so severe. I think that's it. That's five.
Sarah, before you start, I have a very important update.
Oh.
Cookie poll.
Oh! The raisin poll.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Here we go.
I was talking about how raisins get a bad rap, especially raisins inside of cookies, which I think started that idea. But first of all, kudos for me for stumbling across the most inefficient way to do a poll on the internet over Twitter.
People were always also weighing in on the forums. I don't know if you checked there
as
well.
Just on Twitter. Okay. That's what I said on the thing, so
you
got to go with
that.
True, although
don't
it was nice to hear from the people on the podcast. Really brings out the knives when you're talking about raisins. Raisins and Uno are two things that are very similar. Breaks up families, crushes relationships.
Yes. But, polarizing.
Yeah, with over probably 100, 125 votes or so that I could count on Twitter, with 7+, so that's the spread, with the 7 over its opponent, plus raisins.
What?
Yep. the pro raisin crowd.
The internet.
A recast.
Fuck you, internet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's the silent majority, and
I think you counted wrong.
They feel, like they're going to get in trouble.
What was the joke that person made where they said they knew voting for raisins was voting for the something of snacks?
The Nickelback of snacks. Yeah, that was a good one.
that's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. So marginal pro raisin vote from the listeners of Again With This.
I'm extremely disappointed in all of you, but please come back next time.
Let's speak about next time.
Stunned, saddened, and nauseated. To inform you that you better get out the no-dos, because next time on Again With This, it's a Steve-centric episode. Old Nemesis makes Steve wonder why his birth parents chucked him. And Donna and David take the first steps towards becoming capital D, capital N, capital D, Donna and David. Let our visual aids teach your cousin how to freak at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. You can follow me at Tomato Nation, my esteemed co-host Tara at Tara Ariano.
Hi.
And our fine producer Dave at Galar.
Raisins!
See you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
Raisins up!
I hate raisins.
Raisins are great.
Nope.
Guys, we sun made it.
I can't believe you said that.